and welcome to the Netzpolitik podcast. We are not in the studio, but connected to Daniel Schwartz today. Hey, Daniel, thanks for coming to the podcast.
Of course, happy to be here.
Daniel's a professor of law at the University of Minnesota Law School, and he recently co-published a paper together with Anya Prince dealing with discrimination in the age of artificial intelligence. So we're very happy to have you here and to be able to talk to you about this. So you published this paper about something called proxy bias, and I think proxy bias is probably something that most of our listeners haven't heard of so far. So what would you say? How do you explain? What is proxy bias?
Yeah, so what we're really trying to describe is a specific type of discrimination and that we call proxy discrimination. And with proxy discrimination, what occurs is two things. The first is a facially neutral classification correlates with a suspect classification. And what I mean by suspect is I mean legally suspect. So there's some laws that prohibit discrimination on that basis for a variety of different reasons, right? So in the United States, we prohibit discrimination depending on the context, based on race, based on sex, based on genetics, based on health status, and sort of, which types of categories are prohibited depend upon the domain you're in. But, many countries have these types of prohibitions on certain types of discrimination. And so the first element of proxy discrimination is that there's a correlation between a facially neutral characteristic, one that you are allowed to discriminate on the basis of, so, skill or what college you went to or something like that, and a facially neutral characteristic. And that's a pretty common scenario. It's often called disparate impact in the United States. And there's a framework for dealing with disparate impact. It's a very familiar phenomenon. But the second element of proxy discrimination is actually a bit less familiar, but quite important to understand. And in this second element, what happens, or the way we define it, is that the reason why a facially neutral characteristic is useful to the discriminator is precisely because of the correlation between the facially neutral characteristic and the suspect characteristic. So let me just unpack that a bit because it's a bit nuanced. A lot of times when you discriminate on the basis of a facially neutral characteristic, let's say what college you went to. Okay. It's useful because, people who went to some colleges maybe have certain skills that are better than people who went to other colleges. And it's just sort of incidental that it happens to be that it's useful, but it also, potentially disparately impacts, say, African Americans. And in that case, we can, as I mentioned, there are sort of difficulties that arise, but they're sort of pretty well known. But the scenario of proxy discrimination is where it's not incidental that there's a correlation between the facially neutral characteristic and the suspect characteristic. It's actually the very reason why the facially neutral characteristic is predictive. So
can you maybe give an example? Because I think it's probably easier to understand with a more concrete example.
Exactly.
What would be,
So here's a good example, right? Let's say that I discriminate on the basis of your Facebook data, right? And you're a member of a certain Facebook group. And I say, oh, look, it turns out the people who are members of this Facebook group have higher insurance costs. Okay. Now, what Facebook groups you belong to is a facially neutral characteristic. There aren't laws that prohibit, you know, usage of Facebook groups to discriminate, and insurers can do that. And in fact, they're starting to do that. But what if the reason why your Facebook group predicts your insurance claims is because it correlates with your genetics? So what if the Facebook group we're talking about is a Facebook group of people who are concerned about, say, the BRCA mutation, which is a mutation that's correlated with the development of certain types of cancers? In that scenario, the very reason why the Facebook data would be relevant to the insurer is because it correlated with, in this case, suspect characteristics, i.e. your genetic information. And insurers are not allowed to directly discriminate based on your genetic information, at least in certain contexts in certain states. It gets a bit complicated. But there are in a variety of settings, legal restrictions on that. And so in that scenario, what's happening is that there's some facially neutral characteristic, whether it's your Facebook groups, or it's maybe the TV shows you watch, or it's maybe some groups you belong to, whatever it is, and it is predictive for the insurer in terms of setting rates and predicting claims, precisely because it correlates with the suspect characteristic. And so another way of thinking about it is, if you were to control for the, sort of statistical model for the suspect characteristic, then all of a sudden this facially neutral characteristic would no longer be predictive.
But basically in this case, I mean, would it be, if you say this is the Facebook groups that someone belongs to would be a facially neutral characteristic, would it be right now legal for an insurer to have human workers do these searches and do background searches on people who are looking to get insurance and check out the Facebook groups that they're in? Is that something that is possible right now?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. The answer is, right now, if insurers specifically tried to use this information intentionally to try to get at your genetics. So they said they had some person and they told the person, look, we want to discriminate on the basis of people's genetics. We can't do it directly, but we think that maybe there are these Facebook groups that are connected to genetics. Go look for them. That would be illegal because it would be intentional discrimination. But there wouldn't be anything illegal about people just using Facebook groups without intending to discriminate against these legally suspect groups. And so that's where, you know, artificial intelligence really is a game changer in this setting, because in an artificial intelligence context, there's not any intentionality to target a legally suspect characteristic. The AI just goes out and essentially sifts through a tremendous amount of data trying to find correlations. So there's no intentionality, and so there's nothing illegal about it. But to the extent that you have facially neutral characteristics that are available to the artificial intelligence that are predictive of some outcome of interest, then inevitably what the artificial intelligence will do is it will essentially use these proxy characteristics. And so that at the end of the day is our primary argument, that this phenomenon of proxy discrimination, well, it's sort of, you know, it's a pretty niche type of problem outside of the AI context, right? Because of the fact that usually when that's happening, you can essentially just say, oh, well, that's intentional discrimination. You're trying to get at an illicit characteristic, a legally suspect characteristic via subterfuge by, you know, trying to sort of find something that correlates with it, but that's not technically allowed. So it doesn't happen that much. And when it does happen, it's pretty clear it's illegal. In the AI context, our argument is, look, this is actually almost an inevitability, because the very way that an artificial intelligence is structured is that it's going to sift through data, and it's going to use data that is predictive of its ultimate target variable that you program with, irrespective of whether or not the reason why that target variable is predictive is because it correlates with a legally suspect characteristic, or the reason why it's predictive is something more legitimate. I mean, AIs don't ask that question, why is this predictive? They just use variables that are predictive. And so that's at the end of the day sort of our core concern.
When I read through your paper and heard these read through these explanations, I instantly had to think about a case that I think last year made it through the press about Amazon trying to develop a recruitment tool and basically scrapping the whole project in the end because it turned out that the tool was biased against women.
Right.
Even though the gender of the applicants wasn't part of the data that was being fed into the algorithm as training data. So the question is, what happened? Why would this system still be able to pick out women? And then it turned out that the system started to latch on to certain words in the CVs that had the word women or women's in them. So if someone was on the women's rowing team or going to a women's college, then the AI would the algorithm would latch onto those words and make them. Find them in the pattern of data and then basically bias based on these words. So I think it was made me think of the examples that you were giving, that obviously it's really hard to, even when the intention of the developers of these algorithms are good and they do not want to discriminate, let's say on the basis of race or gender, whatever, that this is really hard to eliminate.
No, I think absolutely that's right. And I do think that example is illustrative, right? Because at the end of the day, there are all sorts of different mechanisms by which an artificial intelligence can try to develop proxies for suspect characteristics. So in your example, it's the proxies for your gender are sort of what teams you belong to or what groups you belong to. And those are pretty clear proxies. And so, you know, at the end of the day, an AI may latch onto that if its training data suggests that that's predictive. Now, the difficulty is, it's most likely to happen, this type of proxy discrimination, where the suspect characteristic is indeed, in some limited sense, actually predictive of the things that the target variable that has been programmed into the computer. But the difficulty is sometimes the reason why a characteristic is predictive is not one that we want to credit. So let's take this example of Amazon. Presumably, the AI was actually latching on to these proxies for sex because in its training data, it was finding, for whatever reason, what it was trying to maximize, that this was predictive of your performance at Amazon. It was finding, for whatever reason, that men were performing better at Amazon, at least according to the objective function that was programmed into it. But then you have to ask the question, well, why? Is that something you want to credit in a sense? Well, what if the reason why that's true is because the atmosphere at Amazon was one that was generally hostile towards women and didn't promote the advancement of women, right? In that scenario, what you're actually doing
is you're saying, ah, this is predictive, and so we're going to use it. But the very reason it's predictive is because it correlates with a suspect characteristic, which is your gender. And it does so for reasons we don't want to credit. The reason why, you know, women haven't been as productive in the Amazon workplace in a very narrow sense is because, in this example, Amazon hasn't had a hospitable workplace for them. And so the difficulty is the AI is then perpetuating these biases in a way that, you know, we're deliberately trying to avoid with the law. But essentially, AIs can just get around the law when doing so helps the AI achieve whatever, you know, variables you've programmed it to try to maximize.
So that kind of leads to your claim or something that you recommend in this context in the paper. You say that we basically need to adapt the anti-discrimination laws we have today to be able to effectively combat this kind of proxy discrimination in the age of artificial intelligence and big data. So what would need to change? How would anti-discrimination laws need to change in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing to say is I think it's very hard, right? Like, I don't think this is an easy issue because, in a sense, the point of what we're trying to get at is it's not enough to simply say deprive the artificial intelligence of data regarding suspect characteristics. You know, in the Amazon example, it's not enough to deprive the artificial intelligence of data on the sex of the job applicants.
Yeah, and I mean, if the Amazon machine learning department can't fix that problem, that kind of gives us a bad outlook on what other people dealing with these problems might be able to do, right?
Right. No, exactly. It's a really intractable problem because, and the reason it's intractable, and this is sort of the difficult part, the reason it's intractable is because suspect characteristics often are in fact predictive in a narrow sense of some sort of normally legitimate factor, right? Like, so I think that this is clearest in the genetic context, right? You know, obviously your genetics are predictive of things like, you know, when you're likely to die and what diseases you're likely to have. We still don't want insurers to discriminate on that basis for a variety of really good reasons. For me, the most compelling reason is, you know, if everyone can discriminate on the basis of this information, people won't actually get genetic tests, and then they won't actually be able to take really important proactive measures or take, you know, drugs that really fit their particular risk profile. So you'll actually deter people from getting genetic tests. So it's a really intractable problem when you think about the fact that we want to prohibit employers and other discriminators, insurers, from using information that is in fact predictive. What we suggest, though, is a few sort of ways of thinking about how to deal with the problem. In my mind, the most important first step is to develop data, to have data where you can actually look at and backtest whether or not the artificial intelligence is producing outcomes that appear to systematically disfavor certain groups. So again, going back to that Amazon example, the reason why Amazon was able to, at the end of the day, scrap this program was because they were able to backtest it and see it was only giving them, you know, male candidates. But in a lot of settings, there's not even data on this, so it's actually very hard to tell whether or not the AIs that are being deployed are actually, in fact, disparately impacting protected groups. And
if we try to give an example, it, basically, if I one could say that if I do not know if the people who apply for my loans are like what ethnic background they have, what religious background they have, or what gender they have, then I can't even test to make sure that my algorithm isn't discriminating against them.
Exactly. And so that's my first level sense of the first thing that needs to happen. It's almost a switch from sort of the traditional, we want to be completely blind to any of these factors, to we actually need to collect data on these factors and so that we can make sure that we're not inadvertently.
Absolutely. That's what I thought. It was so so counterintuitive when you hear that, because basically, yeah, instead of usually you would say it's like, don't mention the gender, or just kind of leave out those categories so you can eliminate bias. But in this case, you're actually claiming, no, we do need that information in order to check for bias.
Exactly. Right? And then, you know, you can go further than that. And I think in some instances it will be appropriate to go further, perhaps not in others. But what you can actually do is use statistical techniques to try to test whether or not a facially neutral characteristic that is being relied on by an algorithm is in fact useful to the algorithm, essentially helps it predict the variable that you've programmed it to maximize, the outcomes you've programmed it to try to achieve, because of the fact that it proxies for some illicit characteristic or for some other reason. And so you can actually sort of the simplest way to think about it is sort of a basic statistical regression analysis, where you say, look, if I control for your race, or if I control for your gender or whatever it is, does this characteristic that it's using, you know, like the Facebook characteristic, Facebook group, does that all of a sudden become not predictive or much less predictive? And if some characteristic loses its predictive power once you start including suspect characteristics, then the inference you can make is that the reason why that facially neutral practice was predictive in the first place and useful to the AI in the first place was precisely because it proxied for this prohibited characteristic. And in that case, you know, you then say, okay, well, then you can't use this proxy. So essentially, it's a way of forcing discriminators and folks who use AIs to say, the reason why the AI came up with these characteristics is not just because they're predictive, but they're predictive for reasons that are legitimate, i.e. they're predictive for reasons that are not dependent upon their relationship to suspect characteristics.
What I was wondering is, Do we really need new anti-discrimination laws in order to achieve this? I mean, we do have existing legal frameworks that prohibit discrimination on the basis of, you know, gender and different other characteristics. And basically, you could also argue that it's not the algorithms discriminating so much as it is the company or the government agency that chooses to use an algorithm in a certain setting where it applies to, you know, settings where people could be discriminated. So doesn't the legal frame that we have right now, isn't it sufficient to take action against agencies or companies who would do that?
It depends a lot on where first you're talking about, right? So obviously, you know, even in the United States, there are different states have different regimes depending on the setting, and different countries have different regimes. So, you know, it's hard to speak universally. But the difficulty is, at least in the context of the United States, that we prohibit intentional discrimination. And then, as I mentioned, we have this regime that tries to deal with disparate impact. And that's sort of usually how we conceptualize our sort of anti-discrimination regimes, right? Either you're intentionally discriminating, which is completely not allowed, or you're using a facially neutral characteristic, which correlates with a suspect characteristic. And we may or may not allow that. There's sort of a, you know, there's a sort of three-step framework that's usually used to analyze that. But in my mind, those types of regimes really are not appropriate here, because the difficulty is that AIs will discriminate in the way that we described. They'll proxy discriminate without anyone necessarily knowing that that's what they're doing. So if you have a company that says, look, I just want to use, let's take insurance companies, which is sort of where I focus my research, mostly in insurance. An insurance company wants to predict claims. I mean, that's a completely legitimate thing for an insurance company to want to do. It's actually quite important, okay? And an insurance company that uses an artificial intelligence to predict claims, I mean, you know, that could be really a great idea, right? I mean, if it allows it to predict claims better, that actually might allow it to reduce losses. It might allow it to cause people to be safer. So that's good discrimination. You know, that's discrimination in a sense we want. And the insurance company can just say, okay, well, we're going to use this AI to predict claims, and we're going to, you know, that's all we care about. We're going to use this training data we have. And no one at the insurance company necessarily has to know that the AI is, you know, the AI pops back a model and it relies on, you know, all sorts of data, none of which looks, you know, in and of itself inherently suspect, right? It's not actually saying, you know, rely on the race, rely on the gender of people. It's saying, you know, here, you know, whatever it is, 500 different data points that we're going to use to construct a model of risk. And the insurance company, it hasn't done anything intentionally wrong. And it uses this model because it works. And so from the insurance company's perspective, they haven't engaged in any intentional discrimination at all. And so there's nothing intentional. So then all you can really do is say, oh, well, maybe there's this disparate impact. But the problem, and again, you know, this is a sort of more U.S. specific analysis, so I don't necessarily know how it would be analyzed in other jurisdictions, but the problem with the disparate impact analysis is that there's no distinction that's usually made in how courts apply disparate impact analysis regarding whether or not the disparate impact that is being created by a facially neutral practice is predictive of some legitimate outcome because of the fact that it's proxying for a suspect characteristic or not. All that's asked really in the United States is there a good legitimate business explanation for this facially neutral practice? And the insurance company can come back and say, yes, of course there is. Look, we're predicting claims. That's exactly what, that's our whole business. And so sort of the ordinary disparate impact analysis, you know, probably what I described would be fine because they're engaging in a facially neutral practice, but they have a legitimate business explanation. And the law doesn't really ask this question that we're really focused on, getting back to this proxy discrimination point of, yes, but is the reason why this facially neutral practice ends up being useful to you, helping you predict claims, because of the fact that the facially neutral practice or the facially neutral characteristic is correlated with the suspect characteristic. It sort of assumes that that would only be true if you were intentionally discriminating, which, you know, historically was the case. But because of AIs, we have this middle ground category where it can both be unintentional on the one hand, and so you don't fit in that box of intentional discrimination. But on the other hand, it can be the case that what the AI is doing is really targeting, you know, this suspect characteristic by constructing proxies for it, and the law is not, at least in the United States, equipped to deal with that, because it evolved in a setting where the only real time you would have to worry about proxy discrimination was when it was intentional. So let me just give one example to clarify that. You know, probably the most intuitive example of proxy discrimination is something called redlining, which was also intentional discrimination. What financial institutions did is they decided, well, we don't want to serve minority neighborhoods. They weren't allowed to discriminate against minorities explicitly, so they sort of just, you know, chose geographic regions that were predominantly minority and said, well, we're not going to serve them. Now, that's proxy discrimination, right? It's relying on a facially neutral characteristic where you live because it correlates with a suspect characteristic, what your race and ethnicity is. But it's also, obviously, it's intentional discrimination. So the law had no problem saying, you can't do that. That's, you're intentionally trying to target minorities. And so proxy discrimination sort of historically was just thought of as this sort of variant of intentional discrimination. It was just thought of as you're intentionally trying to discriminate against people and you're basically trying to hide it. And our point is, in this new age, actually, proxy discrimination is not going to be intentional at all. It's going to be AIs constructing proxies for suspect characteristics whenever those suspect characteristics are predictive, irrespective of why they're predictive. And the law really, in the United States, in most settings, I don't think has developed to the point where that particular set of issues fits into a neat category that sort of can be dealt with.
Yeah. So basically, if I got it right, the problem that you see is coming now that we are already facing with big data and algorithms, predictive algorithms sifting through this data, that the discrimination is happening unintentionally and in ways that human minds couldn't even follow because we're just not equipped to process these huge amounts of data, and we cannot see patterns that these algorithms will find ultimately.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, the algorithm might say, look, it's the combination of these 20 different data points that's predictive. And it turns out the reason why those 20 different data points are predictive is because they actually end up, you know, saying something about your race. But no one could actually see that. It's not intuitive. It's not like, some obvious proxy like redlining, where it's like, oh, well, we're just going to sort of try to target minority communities. And so it is very hard to spot, going back to, I guess, an earlier point we made, unless you have the data to sort of back test the model.
Yeah. So what I think it was when the AI Now Institute opened in New York that one of the founders said, or one of the headlines was read, the field of AI research is about to get way bigger than code. Would you consider what you are doing to be part of AI research today?
Yeah. So I think the answer is yes. I do think that this is part of artificial intelligence research. I think that there are a lot of different disciplines that are trying to understand the issues that arise with artificial intelligence. There are computer scientists, there are philosophers, there are economists, there are a variety of other disciplines that are looking at it. I think each discipline brings to the table a different vantage point. And I think from a legal vantage point, I guess the primary way that we tend to look at the problem is to emphasize that from a legal perspective, part of what ends up mattering from our perspective is not just whether or not a characteristic is predictive of some normally legitimate question, like how big are your insurance claims going to be, but why is it predictive? Because if the reason why characteristic X is predictive of claims is because characteristic X is correlated with your genetics
or correlated with your race or correlated with your gender, then that is in and of itself a reason why we don't want to credit that facially neutral characteristic. And so the law really does, and public policy does, demand that you go above and beyond what AIs are currently equipped to do, which is not just identifying characteristics that are predictive, but then asking, why is it predictive? And in particular, is facially all these different characteristics that the AI sort of picks out to predict risk, are they predictive of some legitimate outcome because of the fact that they correlate with legally suspect characteristics? And if that's what's happening, then we have a real problem, because we essentially are developing a regime that can undermine any attempts to limit discrimination when that discrimination is, in a sense, rational. And there are just a lot of times where we want to do that, right? I mean, we've already mentioned a few of them. We don't want to allow insurance companies to discriminate on the basis of genetics, because doing so will cause people not to get genetic tests. We don't want employers to be able to discriminate against people when the reason why those people might not be, from a predictive standpoint, as productive at work is because the employer's climate is one that is makes it hard for members of that group to get ahead. We don't want health insurers, for instance, in the United States, to be able to deny people coverage or to deny people access to care because of the fact that they have pre-existing conditions. Even though, you know, of course, the fact that you had a pre-existing condition is predictive of whether you're going to have another condition. So the law all the time tries to say, yes, I understand that that's predictive, but you still can't do it. And AI really sort of, in a very fundamental way, undermines the law's capacity to do that.
Yeah, well, thanks for giving all these examples, and thank you for talking to us for the podcast. I was going to say coming to the podcast, but coming, usually we are sitting with our guests in our office, Netzpolitik offices, and I think you were actually the first one that we are talking to who is not here. You're actually sitting in your own home right now, probably, right?
It's true, yes. I'm in Minnesota.
Yeah, and also your day is just starting, so
that's true too. Yes.
Thanks for starting the day by talking to us. My name is Chris Kover. I'm editor of Netzpolitik. If you enjoyed this podcast, you might want to check out some of our earlier podcasts. There's also a couple of English language ones. Usually the podcast's in German, but we do have some in English. Also, if you're listening to the podcast somewhere where you can give us a nice rating, do it. The better the podcast is rated, the more visible it will become to others. And that's always something that makes us very happy. Also, our work is funded entirely by donations. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you might want to consider donating to us. And thank you for listening. And goodbye, Daniel.
Thanks so much.
And goodbye, listeners.
Take care.
Bye-bye.